Good afternoon. I'm Callie Crossley, and this is the Callie Crossley Show. Today, close to 500,000 spectators are lining the path of the Boston Marathon, and networks across the globe are recording every step of the way. So we've decided to take you to a mega marathon that has gone under the radar for centuries. Our guest, Christopher McDougall, is the author of the best-selling book, Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen. Christopher McDougall, welcome.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Anybody who's listening to this show is grabbing their heart right now because I am not the sports person. So this is really an exciting day for me to be talking sports with somebody who's as much as a sports person as you are.
How could you not be a sports person after that unbelievable race today? It was just, you know, just thrilling.
In your honor, I watched it.
You got it. It just stirs the heart to see people just moving that magnificently.
I have to say, I agree with you. It's very exciting. So your book, for those who don't know it, is really three stories in one, as the title suggests. And through it all is the story of evolving science about running and the human body. And so my first question to you is, why are humans born to run?
This was really fascinating stuff, and I came across it by accident. You know, my first entry into this subject, because I was actually not a runner myself either. I was a broken-down ex-runner who'd been told over and over again by doctors, you know, to give up that nonsense, that running's bad for the body, and if I keep on doing it, I'm going to have to replace my knees. And then I hear about this tribe, the Tarahumara, in Mexico's Copper Canyons, who can not just do a marathon like we saw today, but they'll do five of those in one day. And as it turned out, there is some groundbreaking anthropological research being done at Harvard, which is pretty clear that humans, the only natural advantage we had through most of our history was the ability to outrun any other animal on the planet. We're not fast, but we have unbelievable endurance.
So based on what you know, and we're going to get back to that research at Harvard, about the science of running, now what you know about it, is there anything that the winners of today's marathon might have put into practice to get to the head of the pack? And let me remind listeners that the winner was a young woman who had never run the marathon before, but she trained on the hills of Ethiopia, and that's for the women. And the men's winner was fifth last year, and he came in first this year.
Robert Chiriot, it was unbelievable. I mean, he took
and set a new record, by the way.
Like 90 seconds off the record. This is, you know, you measure these records in like a second or so here and there. This guy bangs out a minute and a half off the record. It was just sensational. And if I even attempted to second guess one single step those guys did on the course, that would be beyond even my usual arrogance. So, no, I can't offer any suggestions as to what they could be doing differently. But what we do see out there, I'll tell you, I'm actually much more interested not in the runners at the front of the pack, but the 40,000 runners behind them. Because if we saw any other animal species on the planet behaving in this way, like gathering by the tens of the thousands to run through the streets, we would think there's some kind of like mass migration going on. But I think it's testament to our heritage as long-distance runners that we feel this sort of atavistic instinct to gather in groups and run long distances.
Now, you mentioned the Tarahumara, the tribe in the Copper Canyons that were hidden for so long, and you managed through a very interesting story, and people should read the book to find them and to get to know some of them. You know, for them, 26 miles would be like, I guess, walking across the street.
Yeah.
You know, they run these hundreds of miles. Tell us about them.
This is kind of fascinating because, again, we're given this idea that 26 miles is the ultimate challenge, and, you know, the ancient Greek Pheidippides died after 26 miles, and we're always told that this is the upper bar for human achievement. But then you hear about this other group, and it's not just their champions that run these distances, but I saw men in their 70s, men and women in their 70s, running 30, 40, 50 miles at a time in thin homemade sandals. And I think the difference is that if you accept that running is our natural heritage, that if you don't go into it with this mentality that it's work and it's going to be hard and painful and you just relax and enjoy it, then we're capable of so much more than we think.
Now, when you first met them, however, and I mean, you had heard about them, but when you really saw what they could do, give us a sense of, you know, just how you felt about it, how overwhelmed you were at observing what you just said.
Yeah, you know, the thing was, it was pretty foolhardy for me to even go down there. It was, you mentioned arrogance before. It was dumb. They live in one of the most secluded and inaccessible parts of North America. The Copper Canyons are deeper and wider than the Grand Canyon, and they have essentially been hidden down there since the conquistadors arrived. They secluded themselves so they wouldn't have to do combat with the conquistadors, and they've remained almost like a living Smithsonian exhibit, unchanged for tens of thousands of years. The first time I got a chance to see them run, it was actually not even the champions. It was a group of school kids. They burst out of their classroom in this tiny little one-room Dabomata schoolhouse. And this whole group, kids 5, 6, up to 13 years old, ran the equivalent of a six-mile race during their one-hour little recess, kicking this ball along, having a blast. I saw two things. Number one was their method of running seems so light and almost weightless. They're floating across the ground, so different than the way I ran, which is kind of thumping along. Secondly, they were smiling and laughing and having a blast, so much different than most of the sort of grimaces we see on joggers around us. And that's when I realized they were onto something pretty powerful.
It affected how you began to run.
Yeah, what really sank the message home to me was I tried to sort of quiz the Tarahumara and debrief them and sort of bleed their secrets out of them. And, of course, you know, you remain a reclusive tribe by not answering questions when inquisitive strangers show up. So they basically shut me out. But they did tell me about a guy they called the White Horse, Caballo Blanco, the White Horse. And they told me this tale of some mysterious stranger who had appeared in the canyons years earlier and had been living down there ever since and had been trying to turn himself into a 21st century Tarahumara. And they essentially said, go find the White Horse and you'll get your answers. I should have been suspicious, but I was gullible, so I went for it. And it turns out it was actually true. The White Horse is down there. I was able to track him down. And this was what was so cool, Callie, was that he, when he first appeared in the canyons, was the same age I was at the time I went looking for him. He's my same height. He's my same shoe size.
And you're a big guy. You should say that.
Yeah, I'm a big guy. I'm over, you know, like 6'4". At the time, I was like 235, 240 pounds. And the White Horse was a broken-down ex-runner when he had first appeared down there 15 years earlier. I went for a little jog with him, and he was running exactly like those gleeful Tarahumara kids. And I realized that this is something that can be learned. You don't have to be born with it. You can be like Caballo, and you can learn it.
Now, let's go back to that science that we talked about going on, some part of it. You really did followed the path of science all over the place
right. In
every part of the world. But, of course, we take pride in anything that happens right here in Boston.
Yeah.
So here's something from your book that I was particularly fascinated with. Barefoot Ted was right, of course. Lost in all the fireworks between Ted and Caballo was an important point. Running shoes may be the most destructive force to ever hit the human foot. Barefoot Ted, in his own weird way, was becoming the Neil Armstrong of 21st century distance running, an ace test pilot whose small steps could have tremendous benefit for the rest of mankind. If that seems like excessive stature to load on Barefoot Ted's shoulders, consider these words by Dr. Daniel Lieberman, a professor of biological anthropology at Harvard University. A lot of foot and knee injuries that are currently plaguing us are actually caused by people running with shoes that actually make our feet weak, cause us to overpronate, give us knee problems. Until 1972, when the modern athletic shoe was invented by Nike, people ran in very thin-soled shoes, had strong feet, and had much lower incidence of knee injuries. That was fascinating to me. That was something I hadn't heard before your book.
You know, that was all brand new for me as well. I had grown up always being told that the first thing you do if you ever want to learn how to run is go to a shoe store and get fitted for a special pair of shoes and make sure you replace those shoes and take care of those shoes. It was kind of like an oxygen mask if you're going scuba diving. Like, do not attempt this without the proper equipment. So again, to me, that was almost like an inviolable law of nature. If you run, you need special shoes. Then I meet this guy, Barefoot Ted, who turned up down in the Copper Canyons along with me for this bizarre race 9 months later. But and Barefoot Ted runs everywhere barefoot. Barefoot Ted trains by pulling his wife and daughter through the streets of Burbank in a rickshaw in his bare feet. And again, you meet this guy and you think he's an eccentric and he's got nothing to tell me. But then the more I began to research, I realized that he was actually on to something. It's only in our lifetime that running has become associated with fear and pain. Throughout American and world history, running was always associated with freedom, vitality, Navajo young women, their rite of passage into adulthood. was by running a series of long runs every morning into the rising sun. It's always been associated with what is best in humans. And I think that what happened was when we developed this product, which has only been around since the mid-1970s, the best way to sell anything is to make people afraid. If you tell them they're going to get hurt unless that you buy their product, then suddenly you're going to watch sales go up through the roof.
Or you can convince them that it's an exciting product to have. And I want to let our listeners hear this. This is a vintage Nike and Spike Lee ad. Spike Lee is playing a character, Mars Blackmon, and he's convinced that the athletic performance depends on one thing and one thing only.
Money's got to be the shoes.
The shoes?
Shoes.
Shoes.
You sure it's not the shoes?
I'm sure, Mars.
What about the shoes?
No, Mars.
Money's got to be the shoes.
So there you have it. This was a Nike ad, by the way. And, you know, hey, it was for Michael Jordan and the basketball, but Nike had a real huge presence in making us all believe that shoes were really key to the performance and not anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's really sad and it's lamentable because I think the aftershock of that is that what happened with running shoes is that the way you distinguish your product from the other products is by making them thicker and bigger and flashier. And what happened was they kept adding thicker and thicker heels to these shoes, and it created a new way for people to run. Prior to the invention of the modern running shoe, the only way you could run was to land on your forefoot. You can't run and land on your heel and your bare feet because it hurts. If you jump off of a chair, you're going to land on the balls of your feet, bend your knees. That's the way the human body absorbs shock. But then they started escalating the height of the heels on these shoes, and it's almost impossible actually to run in a thick running shoe and not land on your heels because you can't clear the ground with those thick things unless your toes are pointed up. And now, I believe that is what's created this rash of running injuries.
The Tarahumara, just by the way, run in very flat sandals, you describe them?
Yeah, that's what really caught my eye the first time I ever even heard about the tribe. I was down in Mexico on another assignment, and I'm flipping through a magazine, and I see a picture of what looks to me like some old guy in a bathrobe and slippers running down this trail. And it turns out this was a 55-year-old Tarahumara runner who had just won a 100-mile race. And look at that picture thinking, now, hang on a second, where are his fancy shoes? And how is this guy going 100 miles at age 55? That's what really hooked me.
Now, you have a very strong statement you've made that if running shoes were a drug, they'd be yanked off the market.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Here's the situation. There has never been a study which has ever been performed which indicate that running shoes do anything to prevent injuries, that they do anything to make you faster, that they essentially provide any bit of benefit whatsoever. However, there is growing evidence that they may actually do harm. And if you introduce a drug to the market, the FDA will determine at the very least that it's not doing harm. It may not do good, but at least it may make sure that it's not going to be poisonous. What happens with running shoes is there's no evidence that they help, and there is considerable evidence that they hurt.
So do you run barefoot, or what footwear do you run?
I run barefoot whenever possible. And here's the important thing about this question is the confusion and the issue is not about protection of your foot. I mean, the Tarahumara wear shoes. They wear thin homemade sandals. That's still a shoe. Protection is fine. Where running shoes went off the rails was when they started to tinker around with correction, when they started adding all these wedges and lifts and shock absorbers trying to correct the way your foot lands on the ground. That's the problem. So what I like to do is run barefoot whenever possible. If I'm going someplace really, you know, gnarly and scrabbly, I'll stick on a pair of thin sandals. There's this awesome product called the Vibram Five Fingers, this kind of weird-looking foot glove, and that really works well.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a rubber foot. We're going to talk about that more on the other side of this break. I'm Callie Crossley, and we've been talking about the Tarahumara Indians in Mexico, the persistence runners who log up to 100 miles, and about barefoot running with Christopher McNougall. He's a former war correspondent for the Associated Press. He's now a contributing editor to Men's Health magazine, and his best-selling book is Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen. Christopher McNougall, we'll be right back to talk to you.
Yeah.
Support for WGBH comes from you and from Wells Fargo Advisors of Wellesley, helping clients with investment, retirement, educational, and estate planning strategies. Wells Fargo Advisors of Wellesley, LLC, member SIPC. Together, we'll go far. And from Subaru of New England, offering the redesigned and fuel-efficient 2010 Subaru Legacy with symmetrical all-wheel drive. Dealer listing at newenglandsubaru.com. And from New England Nurseries, featuring the annual marathon event with gardening and landscaping supplies to fit a range of budgets and lifestyles, located on Route 62 West in Bedford. More at newenglandnurseries.com.
Sometimes less is more. Like right now. If you enjoy more NPR news and music and less on-air fundraising, then please get involved with a sustaining gift of $5, $6, or $9 a month. You can call 888-897-9424 or give securely online at WGBH.org.
This is 89.7
WGBH, Boston's NPR station.
For trusted voices and local conversation.
With The Takeaway.
The Diane Rehm Show.
And The Emily Rooney Show.
Explore new voices with us.
All day long, here on the new 89.7 WGBH.
Become a sustaining member of WGBH with an ongoing gift of $5 a month and take advantage of a 15% discount on the celebrated documentary Eyes on the Prize, America's Civil Rights Years. Just click the donate button at WGBH.org.
If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Christopher McDougall, the author of Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen. Chris, I have to say that I first heard about your book about a year ago from Joe, my colleague, who's a cameraman at Fox Morning News. And he said what really impressed him were the ultra runners because it was so inspirational. Do you think these stories of the Tarahumara, who are super athletes, and the ultra runners can be inspiring for people who are just sort of weekend runners?
I'm going to tell you something that a lot of people are going to have trouble swallowing, but I think ultra runners, people who compete in 100 and 200 mile races, are going to be the salvation of American running. And I don't mean elite running, but I mean recreational running. And the reason why is ultra runners who compete in races that nobody's ever heard of in places that nobody else ever goes to, like in Death Valley, their spirit is so communal, and their first and foremost priority is challenging themselves and enjoying themselves. And it was startling to me to go to these 100-mile races and find people laughing and joking and sharing drinks. My favorite story about ultramarathoner was I was pacing a woman named Jen Shelton in a 100-mile race, and she sort of vanished into the woods at mile 30, didn't come out again. And when she reappeared, she was with two other runners. What had happened was she had stopped, and it was vomiting, was getting sick, and the two people that she was competing with, rather than dusting her, waited till she was feeling better and made sure she got to the next aid station. And someone said to me, that's the difference between an ultramarathon and a marathon. That's a marathon, they would have jumped over her and had her disqualified. In an ultramarathon, everybody's there as a group.
Well, that's a fantastic way to end this conversation. I have to say, the book for a non-sports person like myself and a non-runner is fabulous. So, Christopher McDougall, thank you so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure, Kelly. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're shifting gears just a little bit, and we're talking about sports today, from the Boston Marathon to the evolution of sports enthusiasm in Boston. And joining me now is writer Chris Klein, author of The Die Hard Sports Fan's Guide to Boston. His sports writing has been featured in the Boston Globe, ESPN.com, and New England Travel. He's also the author of Discovering the Boston Harbor Islands, A Guide to the City's Hidden Shores. Christopher Klein, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Kelly.
Okay, now, today, it would seem, really underscores your whole diehard sports fan thing about Boston. We've got the Boston Marathon, we've got a Red Sox game, and a Bruins game tonight. Does that say it all about Boston
and
sports?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, we're just missing, I guess, the Celtics. I think we have to wait another day for them. But this probably is the best day on the Boston sports calendar. And you just, you know, you start off with the marathon, which is really a quintessentially Boston event. It really is something that's really unique to our area, the longest running marathon. And then you have the Red Sox, which, of course, every game is just a big event. And then you have the Bruins later on. So, yeah, you could have a nice full day as a Boston sports fan or hanging around the city today.
Where does the Boston Marathon fall in the spectrum of, you know, all things sports in Boston?
It's one of these unique events that are just very particular to being a Bostonian. It sort of falls in with the head of the Charles and the Bean Pot as these institutions that are particular to the city. You know, for maybe the real rabid sports fans who are into the Patriots and the Red Sox, they may not really follow the marathon that much. And the reason is because if you're following it really as just a pure athletic sporting event, for the most part, you know, we know these runners for the 2 or 3 hours that they're running.
And it's not participatory. You're watching most of
everybody. And if you're watching the event. Right, so, right. I mean, if you're home at TV, you know, you don't really have this personal connection to the athletes as you do with the local sports teams, of course. But I think really the spirit of the marathon and what makes it a special event is not the lead runners necessarily anyway. It's going out maybe after lead runners go through and then just seeing the thousands of people who are your neighbors who are out there running and the inspirational stories that are there. And that, I think, is what makes it a special event and something that makes it broader maybe than just sports. But for, you know, if you're following it just purely the athletic event and want to see the winners or losers, it doesn't resonate to the same degree as some of the other sporting events that we have. But if for a spectacle and going out to seeing it as a spectator, then that's really where it resonates.
Now, there's enough history in this book to entertain those of us who could care less about the sports here in Boston. Tell me, share with the audience some of your favorite pieces that you came across while putting this book together.
Well, I think what's really ironic is that I think Boston's by far the most diehard sports fan city in the country, but it's one where this certainly wasn't preordained. In fact, up until the time of the Revolution, it was the colony that least embraced sports, and that's because of our forefathers, the Puritans. And when they arrived, they did not embrace any sort of athletic pursuits outside of maybe hunting or fishing. And they thought that sports and athletics were incubators of morally corrupt behavior, such as gambling or activities that profaned the Sabbath. So really, by the time of the Revolution, the only sports that were being played in Boston were lawn bowling and swimming and horse racing.
But as you make the point you make in your book is that Boston has been involved in developing so many sports, though.
And that really happened in the middle of the 1800s. And that's the time when at the Industrial Revolution, people had more time and more importantly, they had the money, more importantly, the leisure time to engage in sports. And the Boston Brahmins became pioneers and so did their sons in the development of a lot of sports. But I think it's also a time when Boston, you know, was known as the Athens of America. So along with intellectualism and spirituality, athletics were embraced as being part of a well-rounded person. And I think the city took to it at that time. And then it sort of became a tradition. You had these events such as the marathon develop in the latter half of the 1800s and early 1900s. And then we know that everything in Boston, and once it becomes a tradition, is something that's handed down from generation to generation. And I think that's why we're so connected to sports nowadays.
We're talking with Christopher Klein. The book is The Die Hard Sports Fan's Guide to Boston. You said you wrote this from the fan's perspective. What do you mean?
What I set out to do was to the book is part history, part guidebook. So I wanted to write from the fan's perspective in terms of if I'm going to go to a local sporting event and I'm going to invest my time and my money, I want to have the best time that I'm there. So when I went to the sporting events, I sort of wanted to check it out from the fan's perspective to know what do I want to know in terms of where do I want to sit, what are my food options, where maybe some of the different spectator tips and hidden secrets that I want to have a great time in the game, or maybe save a buck or two when I go there as well. So I really wanted to come in and write this from the perspective of someone who wants to go to the game and have a good time as possible when they go there.
Well, what What examples of food are readily available? I know the hot dog. What else?
You're finding a lot of unique choices, particularly at Fenway Park. And you now have
it's getting fancy now.
It is. I mean, they actually have executive chefs there that are now preparing food. And you can get, I think these steak tip sandwiches and chicken sandwiches from Hilltop Steakhouse. And they get your Papagino's pizza. But they really go out. They actually have now a vending machine there for kosher food as well. So they're really doing these breakdowns and segmentation in the market. And you have a lot more broad choices than you used to have besides just the hot dog and the beer and the peanuts when you go to the game.
What would turn somebody who's not at all interested in sports into a sports fan?
Well, I think in Boston, it really is because it's tied into the heartbeat of the city. I mean, there's really a vibe to the city that gets tied into how the Red Sox did the night before, the Patriots did. And I think if you really want to know about the heart and soul of the city, you have to know about its love affair with sports. So I think just to sort of get a vibe of the city, you really want to understand about sports. And I think just going to events such as a game at Fenway or the marathon, it's not just what's going on the field, but it's the energy that you get from the fans that are around you. And in a way, it's sort of theater in which it's more than just theater in that there's not just the play that's going on stage, the ball players on the field. The fans are really active participants in this theater. So if you view it in that respect, I think that there's a lot of energy that you get going to a sporting event that you may get a little bit more than going to another cultural event. But I think it's one that, again, really ties into the heartbeat and the vibe of being a Bostonian.
Now, you mentioned that the big four, like basketball and football and something else I can't remember, are really the top sport, hockey, I guess, the top sports here in mm-hmm. Boston. But I wonder about soccer. Is that gaining ground at all? We got the World Cup going on in South Africa. Is anything happening on that front?
It is gaining ground, and there's been a men's professional team, the New England Revolution, that plays down in Gillette Stadium where the Patriots play, and they've been around for about 15 years or so. A women's soccer team, the Boston Breakers, just started last year, and they play at Harvard Stadium. And the soccer matches are really popular with families. They're really, of all the professional sports, provide the most friendly family-friendly atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And, soccer is a popular youth sport, so you get a lot of kids that go there. Then, of course, the immigrant groups to Boston.
Yeah, it's big.
It's huge with mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So World Cup is actually a real fun time, not just to go to the local soccer games, but go check out a game. If Italy's playing, go to one of the cafes in the North End, or Brazil's playing, go to out in Alston or Brighton, and just being around the fans, even if you don't really, again, if you don't necessarily care that much about the sport, it's the energy of the fans
vibe.
Around
yeah,
you that
right.
really draw you in. So,
and you can have chicken wings, too.
Absolutely.
Okay, here's an interesting, until I read your book, I hadn't thought about this really. Of course, it's obvious. This is a town that names a tunnel after a sports figure, mm-hmm. Ted Williams. And I've heard people say Boston's really not a sports town. It's like a cult town. It follows it while people are winning. And then after that, they fall away. What do you say to that?
I don't necessarily agree with that. Boston tends to be a pro town. It is focused on the pro teams in terms of the media. But I think if you look at the games themselves and you take a look at if you go to some of these college events and even high school events, minor league baseball teams, these events often sell out. So it's not just that the fans are focused on the professional teams. There's a minor league team for the Boston Red Sox, the Lowell Spinners. They have a longer sellout streak than the Boston Red Sox do.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And any time a sporting event comes to this region, you really have to act quick and snap up tickets. And it's not just the pro team. So I think I say in the book, if you put up a scoreboard, people will come, sort of like that old Field of Dreams. It doesn't matter. If you start keeping score, Bostonians are going to show up and they want to check out the events. So you find that there are these little pockets, people that are into college hockey and events like the Bean Pod. And you will find that college hockey games sell out around here, but they don't necessarily draw the same attention in the media. So I think with sports radio and the newspapers, the headlines go to the pro teams, but it runs a lot more deeply than just the pro teams in terms of the fan base here.
Is there some sports writing that that you think is good and people should pay attention to here?
I think if you just pick, there's a lot of great sports writing in this town. I mean, you just pick up the two daily newspapers, the Globe and the Herald, and you read the columnists that are in there. And now you're seeing a lot of websites that are growing up, springing up. ESPN has a local website now, ESPN Boston, and the sports radio stations now have their own websites, their own reporters as well. So you're not hurting for sports writing, and you can get it in print, online, all these different media.
Okay. Are you a diehard sports fan?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
What's your sport?
It changes by the season, of course. You know, it depends. I probably baseball is okay. The one that really draws me through. And I'd say if I had to rank them, I'm a Red Sox fan.
Okay. Did you ever – do you play sports?
Those who don't play, watch. That's sort of the motto behind
it. Or write about it.
Or write about them, yeah. Yeah. So I like playing them. I can't say I was ever too good at it. So you know your place and then you become a fan.
There's – as I mentioned earlier, there's so much interesting history in here. One of the pieces I like was about – I didn't know that the Boston Garden scoreboard existed anywhere. I thought that went away.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
It's in the Arsenal Mall in Watertown. It was purchased by a local developer. I think he owned the mall at that time. So now if you walk into the food court while you're at Burger King, look up, you're going to see the old Boston scoreboard that was hanging up for about, I don't know, 60 years in the old garden. It still exists.
See, I love that. To me, that is just totally exciting and interesting. And now, because of your book, I'm going to walk over there and look at that.
Yeah, there you go.
You sure you don't have one other good tidbit for somebody trying to score a seat at, let's say, Red Sox game?
Well, you know, they're not necessarily as hard as you think. As long as you're flexible, they do put some tickets on sale at the start before every game. If you just go to the –
But don't you have to sleep out overnight to get it?
Don't necessarily. If you show up a couple hours beforehand. So if you wait in line, bring the newspaper, bring something good to read, wait for a couple hours. The one thing is once you buy the ticket, you have to go right into the ballpark. So if you bring enough cash and you bring something to spend your time, you can be able to get into a Red Sox game if you really want to do it.
I was listening this morning to my colleagues at WTKK, and they were doing a poll asking people which one of these three sporting events today would pique their interest most. And 63% said the Bruins game.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you?
No. No,
really?
It doesn't, because it's a playoff game. So it just means so much more than the like I said, your real sports fan is going to get sucked into the pro teams around here. So I'm not surprised it would come down to the Red Sox or the Bruins game. And because the Bruins game is a playoff game, that's going to carry a little bit more weight. And the Red Sox lost three in a row going into today, too. So.
Oh, okay. So that's it. See, I wouldn't know that. If you weren't here with me, would you have been watching the marathon?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely would want to have my remote and be flipping back and forth between the two, the Red Sox game and the marathon. So.
Were you surprised that the men's winner, Mr. Chariot, not the one who won the other four marathons, broke a record today?
I'm surprised about the record and that he would do it so easily. It's not a course that you can necessarily run too fast on. I think the weather conditions were pretty good in terms of the temperature. It depends on where that wind is often the factor, so depending on how that was blowing during the race. But to shatter a record by that much, I think, as your previous guest said, is something that's truly unusual to do.
If you were to write this book a year from now, would you discover shifting loyalties in terms of teams and or enthusiasm about games? Because that poll actually did surprise me. I didn't think it would be the Bruins.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so necessarily. You might find that the shift is generally between Red Sox and Patriots are 1-2, Bruins and Celtics are 3-4, so you might find some shifts among those two groups, but Bruins and Celtics are not moving up to the top two in the next year or so.
Okay, well, they're moving up on our list. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about Boston sports and sports enthusiasts with writer Christopher Klein. He's the author of The Die Hard Sports Fan's Guide to Boston. His other book is Discovering the Boston Harbor Islands, A Guide to the City's Hidden Shores. Christopher Klein, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going out on the song Thank Goodness for the Bruins by Ryan Parker. Up next, our regular Monday feature, Local Made Good. We'll be back after this break. Stay with us.
I fear that they are good and that Danny Ainge is starting to return them to the glory they once had in the garden. So thank goodness for the Bruins, or I couldn't watch the news, 'cause I'd hardly get to see a team from Boston ever lose. The first thing that I check is to see how they are doing, even though I don't watch hockey. Thank goodness for the Bruins. Even though I don't watch hockey, thank goodness for the Bruins.
Support for WGBH comes from you and from the New England Mobile Book Fair in Newton. For 53 years, New England's independent bookstore. The New England Mobile Book Fair. Find them online at nebookfair.com. That's nebookfair.com. And from the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Bernard Haitink leads the BSO in music of Strauss and Mozart April 22nd through 27th. Info at 888-266-1200. And from Comcast, last year donating $11 million to local charities and TV and internet services valued at $3.8 million annually to schools and libraries in eastern Massachusetts and New Hampshire. More at Comcast.com.
This is 89.7
WGBH,
Boston's NPR station
for trusted voices
and local conversation
with the world,
the PBS NewsHour,
and the Callie Crossley Show.
Explore new voices with us all day long
here on the new 89.7 WGBH.
This spring, WGBH thought you'd appreciate more news and music and less on-air fundraising. So this program is coming to you fundraiser-free. If you like the sound of that, please help reduce on-air fundraising with the sustaining gift of $5, $9, or $12 a month. Call 888-897-9424 or give securely online at WGBH.org.
This is 89.7
WGBH, Boston's NPR station for trusted voices and local conversation.
With Fresh Air and The Emily Rooney Show.
The new 89.7 WGBH.
I'm Callie Crossley, and this is The Callie Crossley Show. It's time for our regular Monday feature, Local Made Good, where we celebrate people whose creativity and individuality bring honor to New England. My guest today is Daniel Swenson. He's the co-founder and managing partner of a footwear startup out of Beverly, Massachusetts, called Rocker X. The company is dipping its toes into the muscle-toning sneaker boom with its shoe, the Kimberly. David Swenson, welcome. Daniel Swenson, welcome.
Good afternoon, Callie. Well, and yourself?
Good. So tell us about Rocker X.
Well,
Rocker RX
is a toning sneaker that we developed in August of 2009. And we have three styles on the market at the moment, one called the Adrian, one called the Kimberly, and one called the Jennifer. And we're trying to get into the market with the toning industry. MBT started it approximately 6-7 years ago. Skechers jumped into it. New Balance is making a shoe. Avia is making a shoe. So all the major manufacturers are making shoes now. And myself, my two other partners said it's time for us to jump on board the bandwagon. And we're throwing our hands in and we're trying it out.
Well, you left out the great part, though. The names of the shoes are?
The wives. The three wives.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So we can't let them out.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's what I wanted to tell you. Listeners, I have the shoe in my hand, and it does rock. It rocks back and forth. So the dynamic motion of this is supposed to do what?
It's supposed to help the posture of your back, basically. Mm-hmm. It gives you a good center of balance. It's your natural motion, heel to toe, heel to toe, heel to toe. So you don't have to run. You can just stand there, and by standing there, the natural motion supports your back, it tightens your calves, it helps your thighs, and the whole construction works.
And the backside area, too.
And your glutes, yeah, everything, and your abs. I mean, it's basically for toning your whole body and everybody today. A lot of people, the marathons today, they don't like to go out and run 26 miles, but they'll walk around the neighborhood, they'll go shopping in the mall, they'll go food shopping, and it works every aspect of that.
Well, some of us can't run 26 miles, right, I'll tell you that. Now, you mentioned MBT. This is a Switzerland-based company that started making these shoes, the rocker kind of shoes. And I wanted to play an ad for our listeners because they kind of burst onto the market. Reebok burst onto the market with a provocative ad that got everybody's attention and, let's say, was a little sexist.
But gets all the attention now. She's so tight now, so pretty, and so stupid.
Make your boobs jealous with a shoe proven to tone your butt more than regular sneakers. Reebok Easy Tone with Balance Ball inspired technology. Better legs and a better butt with every step.
I'm surprised that that shoe managed to sell anything after that.
It has done very, very well, too.
I'm just, you know, but here's the point. These shoes, all of these shoes that are aimed at women.
Correct.
Tell me why.
Well, women are busy with their lives. They have children. They have careers because everybody needs extra money. They just don't have time to go out and, you know, I guess women are letting themselves out and they need to get in shape, I guess.
Well, it's fascinating to me that nobody thought of doing this for men, though. But mm-hmm. So that's not – there's no male shoe
on
the market.
Nope, there are male shoes.
Oh,
I mean, we're actually
okay.
Coming out with one in June. Men's shoes are coming out. It's called the Jonathan.
Okay.
And they will be in. Skechers actually has shoes. MBT has shoes.
Okay.
Men are using them, and it's more of an everyday – and they're gearing toward the waiters – In restaurants to use them because you can work on them and they're great for your feet all day.
What do your customers say or what do you hear back from customers? I mean, why is this taking off so much?
Basically, they're saying that people have foot problems. They're saying they're helping their feet, the toning on the legs, they're tightening all their body parts. I mean, one woman gave a testimonial, said that the center of balance is 50-50, and hers was 45 on one side, 55 on another, and she bought our shoes, and now it's 49.5 and 50.5. So the center of gravity is great for her. So it's just it's a health issue right now.
Okay. You know, I want to let our listeners hear this sneaker company, Skechers, and here is their ad, which was not sexist, but it's interesting because it really speaks to the health issue.
Get in shape without setting foot in a gym with Shape Ups from Skechers.
I already feel a difference in the way my jeans fit.
My feet, legs, and back don't hurt at all anymore.
I'm Joe Montana, and I spent 16 years playing football, and Shape Ups have improved my strength and posture.
Get in shape. Shape Ups from Skechers.
Now, let me, you know, there have been some studies done, so for people who are curious, some sponsored by the shoe companies, you won't be surprised that those said that these shoes really work. For the other folks who are not connected with the shoe companies who are sports medicine people, they're not quite sure. You know, they don't say it hurts you, but they're not quite sure that it's going to do all that it says it's going to do. So we have a ways to go before there's any, I suppose, scientific evidence, but there is anecdotal evidence from your customers that they're enjoying the benefits.
There's no question. I mean, the customers are the ones who are wearing the shoes, and they're going to tell you how they feel on their backs and if it's working for them. As far as the sciences, that's still developmental, and they're still learning about it, and every day they're learning about it. I mean, one doctor's going to say it works. It's, for example, it's like running. Some people say running is very painful for the knees. It hurts your knees. You're going to get arthritis, where other doctors say there's no such case. Everybody is an individual. Every case is you have to take it within itself. Each case is very different. And that's the same thing with the toning sneakers. And some doctors are going to say it works. Some doctors are going to say it's not. It's like going to a chiropractor. Some people say crack your back. Some people don't. Everybody's individual, and you have to, you know, do what's right for yourself.
We are speaking with Daniel Swenson. He and his partners have started a footwear startup out of Beverly, Massachusetts called Rocker RX, and that's the name of the shoe. Now, here's a situation where you weren't trying to come up with a different wheel. You sort of went along with the wheel that was already out there. You just grabbed onto a trend.
Exactly. Basically, the field was being planted, and we are trying to get some seeds. I mean, that's basically what we're doing. And fortunately for us, The best marketing company in the footwear industry is Skechers, and they promote the toning industry. And with their help, they're helping all the other companies on board. They helped Reebok. They've helped, you know, Avia's coming on. New Balance is making one. But Skechers is far ahead of everybody else because of how they market products.
Well, in fact, in March 2009, the company's stock had dipped to $5.20 a share. But by January, it's up to $31.45.
And it's even more today. And it's because of this one particular category, the toning and their shape-up sneakers.
Now, you didn't come to this without any background. You worked at a discount shoe retailer in Boston's South End.
That's correct.
So you had a chance to observe the kind of shoes that people were interested in the sneaker area.
Exactly.
And what did you see that led you to know that this is going to work? Aside from Skechers already being out there.
Skechers, everybody, you know. Everybody was talking about getting in shape in MBT and they needed an alternative to running because a lot of people don't have the time to go running and they're just walking every day. They need to be comfortable on their feet. More and more people are becoming diabetics and everything is about the health. And this category is all about the health. It's about being healthier. I mean, that's why our slogan is footwear for a healthier you. And basically, wear our shoes and hopefully you'll be healthier.
At one point, Oprah made the shoe, the kind of shoe, one of her favorite things. That didn't hurt, did it?
No, that doesn't hurt at all. when the powerhouse says something, it only helps.
Your shoe is being sold on Amazon, which is an interesting way of selling it, and also with some local retailers. Why'd you go that route as opposed to having a standalone store?
Well, we do have stores that are selling independent shoe stores all across the country selling it. But my two partners are involved in the internet business, and that was, we had strength there, so that's how we started to go on the internet.
You got to tell us about that eBay one-day sale that just blew you out of the water, so to speak.
Yeah, first shoes came in December, and we brought in a container, which is about 2,900 pairs, and eBay has a daily deal, it's called, and we put up all 2,900 pairs, and we ended up selling 2,600 pair in one day in a 24-hour time period with basically nobody knowing our brand, anything about us. They understood the concept of the toning industry and the sneakers, and because it was affordable price, we sold 2,600 units while 40,000 people looked at the website and looked at it. So it was great recognition for us.
The shoes cost between $69 and $79, $79.99. What's the difference?
Different styles.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And this is a critical question. Are Kimberly, Jennifer, and Adrian wearing Rocker RX?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Okay, we like to know that, you know?
Yes.
Okay, because it's named after Kimberly, so we want to make sure we look at her all the time wearing Rocker RX, right?
Exactly.
So, they're deliberately unstable. They're being compared to those balls that people use in the gym where you sort of get on those. They're big, soft balls, and you try to find your balance. So in addition to theoretically exercising your legs and your butt and all of that, you're also getting balance, a better balance?
That's correct. I mean, basically, your center of balance is being straightened. And if your balance is straight, it's a better posture. And if you have a better posture, it's only healthier all the way around. Your whole body is in better shape. If you stand up straight, it's a lot better than keeling over. So that's the whole thing, the center of balance. And that's why the shoes have the rocker bottom.
Now, tell me why it would make a difference, or should I add this to my complement of walking shoes? There's some very good walking shoes on the market, as you know. That's a totally different thing. They don't have this rocker motion.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to tell me, yes, of course I need a Rocker RX, but
I'm
in terms of and what it does for your body, though, differently. What's the difference between what's happening with a walking shoe and what's happening with Rocker RX?
Well, Rocker RX is...
And you know shoes, so, you know, tell the truth here.
Well, Rocker RX is giving you the balance. It's your natural motion of your foot, heel to toe, and you're moving. And typical walking shoes tend to be flat. So it's not doing the motion. It hurts you, if anything. You need to do the natural motion of your foot, and that's heel to toe. And that's why the rockers are working, or the shape-ups, or the MBTs.
Can you go long distance with a Rocker RX, or is that really more for a flat shoe?
Oh, no. Yeah, you can go long distance, definitely. You can go 5-10 miles.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
okay.
You can't do it initially because it will hurt the back of your legs when you first try these shoes because you're not used to the stress on it. You'll feel it. It will be a burning sensation. And then after you develop the muscles there, then you'll – it's like anything.
Is that a good thing?
Tolerance.
The burning sensation?
Yeah.
It
is. It's strengthening your muscles.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you are an entrepreneur. Do you have any advice for aspiring entrepreneurs? Because, again, you grabbed onto a trend, but still, the economy is down. This is not when somebody starts a business.
Not necessarily, no. It's not the best time to start a business. I mean, the bottom line is in life you have to throw stuff at a wall and hopefully something sticks. You have to go with your heart. I mean, that's what we did. We believed in the idea and the concept. And more important than anything with Rocker RX, what we have done, we have teamed up with a company called Souls for Souls, which is a charitable company in Tennessee, where every single pair of shoes that we've sold through Rocker RX, we have donated a pair of shoes to an impoverished child overseas. Right now, where the shoes are going, Haiti, because of the earthquake. And so, I mean, we've donated almost 10,000 pairs of shoes to the children in Haiti. And I think that's better than the shoes themselves. I mean, we're giving back to the community, and that's what our goal is. I mean, we're trying to help. I mean, we're little people, and we're just trying to make a little bit of meaning in the world.
Okay. Now, I know you're coming out with the Jonathan. After that, what do you have in
mind? With the Jonathan, we're also coming out with a sandal called the Emma. That will be in the same container coming in the beginning of June.
What kind of describe it for me.
It's an open sandal, open-toe sandal with a strap on the back of the heel. It's for women, and it comes in three different colors, and it also has a rocker bottom, where all the sandals that are rocker bottoms that they say are on the market, they really aren't rocker bottoms. This is actually the first one that's coming out.
Well, what's the difference?
They're flatter soles.
Okay.
This actually has the same sole that we use in our sneakers.
So you really have to try them on to know if you're getting the rocker thing or not?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's correct. And you can't try just one of the shoes on. You need to try them both on because it is a different sensation.
Okay. And now I want to know if people have come in after wearing Rocker X for, I don't know, 3 months or so, and they're now supermodels.
We haven't had any yet. We haven't had any yet, but I mean, the positive feedback we like, but no, nobody's a supermodel yet. That's not the goal.
Oh, it's not?
The goal is for a healthier you.
Yeah, but wouldn't a healthier me be a supermodel? That'd be pretty good.
In your own mind, that's all. As long as you're happy.
All right. Well, I just think your idea is really interesting, and it's a great thing, and we love Local Made Good every Monday to showcase folks like yourselves who are doing stuff for New England. So, Daniel Swenson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kelly. Have a great day.
And Daniel Swenson is the co-founder and managing partner of a footwear startup out of Beverly, Mass. Called Rocker RX. This is the Callie Crossley Show. Today's program was engineered by Alan Mattis and produced by Chelsea Murs. Our production assistant is Anna White Knuckleby. We got special production help today from our intern, Vivian Ho. We are a production of WGBH Radio, Boston's NPR station for news and culture.